I love that.
Hey guys, welcome back to Listen Bitch Presents Tell Me Why You're Special. You guys, this is the arena. This is where, you stop waiting and you start showing up because you weren't created to shrink back from the hard shit, okay? God's DNA is in you. You were built to lead, to love, and to show up even in the moments that most people are avoiding and the hardest parts of your life. You guys, that's not something to hide. That's literally your message. And I want to get into that today. Today's guest is Jason Harris. He works in one of the hardest spaces there is, and that is grief. And somehow he brings laughter into it. I am not going to tell his story. The whole point was to bring him on for him to do that. So I just want to say, Jason, thank you so much for taking the time to grace us with your presence and your wisdom today. First question that everybody gets out the gate is, let's have your elevator pitch. Tell us what you do, who you are, and what you think makes you special.
All right. Thank you, Brandon. I am excited about being here. Love the opportunity. I always say that I am the founder of Morning Into Dancing, not morning as opposed to evening, morning like I'm sad, MourNing, into dancing. And I'm a funeral celebrant. And people hear that and they say, "Your what hurts?" That is just a fancy word for a guy that speaks at funerals. But I'm not, the reverend or the preacher or the priest. The root word is from celebration. I love to say that I put the fun in funeral, the FUN in the rest of that word, because when funeral directors tell me, "Jason, we've never heard so much laughter coming out of our chapel than when you do services here," that's my badge of honor. And it's not my goal. It's not, I'm going to get up and make people laugh. You don't turn a funeral into a comedy club. That'd be kind of disrespectful. But it is my methodology and the way I do things that makes it, attendees say, "I've never seen a funeral like this before. I wish more people were doing funerals like you do." So that's my mission now. So I'm going to teach my method. There's 25,000 funeral homes in the country, and I want to put a Morning Into Dancing speaker in every one of them.
I do love that. I think that is incredible, and I think it's so important, not just for the energy, but like the memory of we should celebrate everything we did in life. It shouldn't be a place, that place in that moment has nothing to do with the person that died. Everybody's grief is for themselves and everything that they're losing, everything that they're missing out on. And to keep them from getting stuck in that story forever, to give them that gift of like the last day we're gonna, really come together and remember this person and honor their life, that's huge. I mean, I would want to have a good time doing that. I don't want, nobody wants people crying at their funeral. Like, let's celebrate. I want you guys to be like, hell yeah, she did it. She did everything she wanted to do and she's got the legacy. Like, let's party, right? Like, it shouldn't be.
Absolutely. In fact, Brandon, you know what? So many people say, and you may have heard people say this yourself, even though it's probably not a topic that comes up with you as much as it does me, which is on the daily. But when people say, "I don't want you to make a fuss when I pass," in fact, I help people prearrange their funerals. That's what I've been doing for almost 14 years. I do pre-need funeral insurance, and that part's boring, so I don't want to get into that. But helping people pre-arrange, I hear that all the time. "I don't care what you do with me. I'll be dead. Just put me in a box, throw me in the backyard, blah, blah, blah," all that stuff. Everybody knows you're disingenuous when you say that. But when you're saying, "I don't want to make a fuss," can I tell you an illustration that I use at most of my funerals in the beginning? Okay, so I say to people, if I even bring that vibe up at all, I'll say, "How many of you like the Olympics? I mean, we just saw one of the most epic, and when the US hockey teams, won gold and everything. But have you ever seen an Olympic athlete win gold for his country, look over the judges and say, "I don't want to make a fuss. Just put that medal in a box and mail it to me. Here's my address." That's stupid. I mean, that's asinine. Nobody would ever do that. They put that athlete on the highest of three platforms, and they put the medal around his neck. They raise the banner of his country, and they play the anthem. And when the camera zooms in on his face, what you almost always see are tears. And he's not sad because the race is over. He was, "I don't need tears at my funeral." He's looking at everybody saying, "Look what you did. I mean, you did it." And that is the lens through which I view funerals. That is the vibe I'm looking for. I say, "Look, we're not here today because this person died. We're here because they lived." That's what it should be about.
That's what it should be about. I love that. And okay, so here's the thing. I kind of want to start at the beginning because you spent decades in leadership and now you're working directly with grief. I need you to spill the tea on everything that pulled you into the space. Like, what is the story behind that? Because who just wakes up and they're like, yeah, I'm gonna what I'm gonna do.
Exactly. Funerals. Let's do funerals. As a
Yeah.
matter of fact, I was a little bit more heels dug in when that was an option.
Yeah.
I won't go into all the life circumstances, but I was moving back to Texas from which I was in which I was born, coming back home, oh gosh, 14 years ago, and I knew I was going to be in sales. I mean, I have a lot of ministry experience and leadership experience and things like that, but if I knew that I needed to do something in sales. I had two options. When I did my just initial Google search for, available jobs in the DFW area at the time, one of them was for more remodeling. I've sold windows and so and roofs and siding and gutters and doors and yada yada. But I didn't really like the particular vibe I got at that interview. And the other option, and you ready for this? It said pre-need funeral sales. And I thought that's right up there with chewing on aluminum foil. I mean, who wants to what? Funeral sales. And but I went and I checked out the little presentation about it, and I thought people would be stupid not to do this. And if you don't want to put a nickel in me talking about that, because I'm also very passionate about that. Only 19% of the population has prearranged their funeral. 89% agree it's a good idea. A lot of people haven't even thought about it, but over half the funerals I speak at, it's an unexpected death, either a car accident, motorcycle accident, brain aneurysm, heart attack, something where you just talked to the person yesterday and what? They're now gone. So when you're trying to make arrangements, when your brain is that fried and messed up and grief and everything, it's nearly impossible. Plan ahead. Okay, end of commercial. But I was really good at it because, again, Brandon, I was passionate about it. And I worked myself out of a job. I started out as just an agent, and the company says, "You're too good at this. We want you to teach other people to do this." I've been a sales manager before, so I thought, okay, second verse, same as the first. And so I start recruiting a bunch. But part of my job now is to meet funeral directors and funeral homeowners. And so I worked with about 60 across the country, across East Texas, which is like a country. And word kind of got around. These guys are tight-knit fraternity. They all know each other. And they're saying, "Hey, if you ever need somebody to do a funeral, Jason does a really good one." And it just kind of spread from there. And then I actually got a certification to be a celebrant. I know I've already talked a long time without a question, but
No, this is good.
here's something that most people don't know, and this is going to freak you out. All right, who do you call when somebody wants to be married or buried? You call the preacher, right? I can marry him and bury him. That's the whole I've been licensed and ordained thing. Do you know I went to 5 years of Bible college, 3 years of seminary, got a master's degree in preacher training? You know how much training I got about funerals? I
Probably
had
not
one lecture. I had a single lecture, not a class, not a course. Not a semester, a lecture. And that was combined with doing baptisms and the Lord's Supper and weddings. And so preachers are not taught to do funerals. They're taught to preach. And it's my conviction, Brandon, families don't need a sermon at a funeral. They need a celebration of their loved one's life. So I'm going to shut up about it because I could talk for an hour about more of that. But when I developed my method of doing funerals and nobody else is doing it like this, people started paying attention and saying, what's really awkward is when people come up to me after a funeral and say, "Dude, will you do my funeral?" Because I'm like, when should I pencil you in? Are you okay? I mean, are you feeling all right? But when people say, "I hope you're around when I die, because I want you to do my funeral," I've never seen anything like this. And it's fun. I love it.
That's amazing. Tell us a story about like the first time you saw laughter break through that heavy grief in such a powerful way.
I'll tell you one of the funniest stories, and it's just, when I do start teaching my method, One of the best things about it is I have the confidence, Brandon. This has happened to me twice, where a funeral director calls me in a panic and says, "Can you do a funeral today?" And I'm like, "Today, today? Like what time today? This is like 11:30 in the morning." And he said, "It's at 2 o'clock." Okay, like in 2.5 hours, you want me to speak at a funeral? Can you tell me who died? And a next of kin? You have a phone number, whatever. And so now, typically, I'll put 20 to 25 hours into funeral prep, just because the family deserves that. But to shoot straight to the answer to your question, I was asked to do this once for a Marine. Okay, can you be out of the veteran cemetery in 45 minutes? And I'm like, this is going to take me about that long to get there. And so I jump in the car. I'm cruising out there. The widow meets me at the gate, and I'm like, "I'm so sorry for your loss. I usually have a little more time to prepare for these things, but if you don't mind, I'm going to turn that pavilion over there into a giant living room, and we're just going to celebrate him in real time. There's five questions I usually harvest from people, and the answers to, and that's what shapes my eulogy. But I don't have any of that right now, so I'm going to ask it live and in person. Is that okay?" She said, "I don't care what you do. I'm just glad you're here." Remember, this guy's a Marine, right? And so my very first question is pretty innocuous. It's just, what did you call this person? Because, and the reason I asked that is if someone got up at my grandmother's funeral and talked about Mabel Lee Harris, I'd have been like, yeah, that was her name, but who? I mean, I don't refer to my grandmother's obituary name. That's my mammal. So I'm looking for, it's usually the second or third question is when the laughter starts rolling in. But as soon as I ask that question, Brandon, what did you guys call this guy, this Marine? The place exploded in laughter. And I thought, okay, this is going to be good. No one would say it. No one would tell me why everybody laughed. Suddenly, everyone's staring at their shoes. Why? Because they think I'm a preacher. They think I'm the minister, the whatever.
Tell you.
And so it wasn't until after the service, which, by the way, the service went great, lots of laughter. It was cool, even though it was such short notice and everything. As they're putting his urn into the columbarium there in the cemetery, I heard somebody say, "Hey, there's a party over at the VFW." And I looked up and I said, "I like parties. Can I come?" Well, what are they going to say? "No, I just did the service. I pulled that off, just out shooting from the hip." And they're like, "Okay." Now, I quit drinking about a year and a half ago, but at the time I was still drinking. And so I bellied up to the bar. I had a big old pint, loosened my tie, took off my jacket, and I thought, "Oh, he's just a normal dude." Three people came up to me and they said, "You're probably wondering why we were all laughing so hard." I said, "No, I'm not. I'm not leaving until somebody tells me why everybody was laughing so hard." And I don't know if I can say this on your show or not.
Say it.
But I mean, since your show typically includes bitches, they said, "Well, nobody even knew his real name." I said, "Really?" I said, "Yeah, everybody called him Fucker. That was his nickname. Everybody called him that. And his wife's name was Red. That was her name." So at VFW, a karaoke night, here comes Red and Fucker. And I'm like, "Really?" And so all that to say, the answers to these questions, it's not what I say. It's not what I get up and, wax eloquently with poems and liturgies and things. It's the answers from the people that know them the best. And so when they're answering these five questions, there's a lot of laughter that's involved. And laughter through tears is a very healing emotion.
I mean, we've heard that, right? Like, laughter is the best medicine, but like,
Oh, right.
I don't think people take it serious. So, can you explain to the listeners why laughter is such an important part of healing, even in the moments of loss?
Yeah, it's, and again, I want to be careful to say it's not the goal, but it is, even the third question that I ask is just tell me one of your favorite memories of or with this person. And that's where the majority of the laughter comes from, because when people share their favorite memory, it's usually something outrageous. I'll give you an example. The very first time I started using these questions, I mean, I'd just written them, and there was a lady who came to the funeral home, and her husband had died just 12 hours ago, because that's where you go. You go to the funeral home, you try to start making arrangements. What do I do? And they asked her, who's going to do the service? She said, I don't have a preacher. I don't know. I have no idea. And they said, well, we've got a guy, but he's going to want to talk to you. So I'm in the arrangement office with this lady, and that third question in, I said, you might, you know, and she'd been married for 26 years, by the way. And I said, tell me one of your favorite memories of your husband or with your husband. And so I'm anticipating 26 years of marriage is going to be like a romantic trip or their honeymoon or some grand overture or something. And I never get tired of the eyes rolling up to the right, accessing a memory, and then a smile growing across her face. I said, okay, you got it. What are you thinking of right now? She says, well, we have a really steep driveway. I thought, okay, not exactly where I thought you were going with this, but continue. She said, I once watched my husband ride an office chair out the garage and down the driveway and across the street just to see if he could do it. And I thought, really? That's your favorite memory? But the truth is, I mean, that's a silly story. And it took all of 7 seconds to say that. It's not like there's their long stories when I ask for memories and people start sharing these anecdotes and everything. But when I repeated that 7 second memory in a room full of people that knew he was a hold my beer kind of guy, I mean, there was uproarious laughter. And so I don't know if that answered your question. I just know that the chemicals and the dopamine and the what's the other one that I'm trying to think of, the happy hormone that
Your
that your
serotonin, yeah.
yes that your brain releases and things, it does. It is a medicine, and it does bring the mood up, but it's never the goal. Gosh, I hope I can get some laughs today. I don't get up and tell jokes, that'd be silly. But it's, I mean, it usually just, it brings out the actual personality of the person, and I think that that's what's healing about it.
No, I think that's amazing. What do most people get completely wrong when they're trying to comfort someone who is grieving?
Well, gosh, how much time do we have? First of all, we have accumulated in our brains all of these little cliches that we've picked up. I don't know if they're movie lines or what, but I promise you, just right now, strike anything that comes out of your mouth, a grieving person, that begins with the words "at least." It's not going to land well. Don't say, "At least he's in a better place. At least she's not suffering anymore." At least, at least, at least. That's terrible. For one thing, people don't want your advice. They don't want, well, what you need to do is just stay busy, or they don't want your advice.
No.
I listened to an audiobook this last summer by a guy named Michael Sorensen, and it's called "I Hear You." It's
Okay.
not a grief book. It's about active listening skills. And when I first, it's a short book. You can listen to the whole thing in 2 hours and 15 minutes. But the first time I listened to it, I was on my drive up to Dallas from down here in Temple. It's about a 2 hour drive. And my conclusion when I finished listening to "I Hear You" by Michael Sorensen was, I'm a really bad listener. And when he talked about developing this skill of validating other people, he said it was almost like unlocking a superpower. And it's, in fact, I can't remember the subtitle exactly, the surprisingly simple skill to extraordinary relationships. And that's very much what these questions do. I learned kind of in a backward way when I started using these questions to write a eulogy for someone that I didn't know, is I was on an airplane with and a lady was sitting next to me, and we were getting buckled in. And if you haven't figured this out by now, if you sit next to me on an airplane, we're going to be friends. I'm that guy. Yes, I'm going to, unless you put the earbuds in and stare out the window, like, don't talk to me, I'm an introvert, then I might let you have 20 minutes of silence, then I'm going to talk to you. And so when this lady asked me what I did, and I said, well, as strange as this sounds, I speak at funerals, but my passion is grief support. She immediately, it's almost like meeting a doctor and asking, does this look infected to you? A little free advice, maybe.
I'm sure.
And yeah. She said, "Oh my God, where were you 2 years ago when my mother died?"
Ah.
And that's exactly what I said, exactly what you said. And I said, "I really, really hate to hear that your mom died." And what fell out of my mouth organically without even thinking about it was, "Do you mind if I ask you a few questions about your mom?" And she immediately said, "I would love that."
Yeah.
She said, "No one ever lets me talk about her." And that kind of makes sense. You hear somebody say, "My dad died last week," or "My mother died," or "My grandmother died." We're like, "How about them cowboys?" We like change the subject because
Uncomfortable.
suddenly I'm going to be uncomfortable with your grief. I don't want to make you sad.
Yeah.
So when I said, "Can I ask you questions about your mom?" She said, "Please." And so I just started asking these five questions. And before you know it, we're both laughing together
Yeah.
and slapping our legs. And then the last question is so emotive. And now we're both crying together because I'm 110% empathic. And then I left her alone. It was a 3 hour flight. I wasn't gonna bug her the whole time.
Yeah.
But she got my number, and I'd give anything to still know this woman's name. I don't remember it. But I mean, the story's in my book. But about 3 hours after we landed, Brandon, she had taken my phone number down. I got a single text message from her. Never heard from her again. That text message said, "You have no idea how much I needed that."
Yeah.
I thought, that was so simple.
Right.
And I didn't say, "Well, at least she's in a better place. At least she's not suffering anymore. You know, at least you had her for 50 years," or any of the things, the asinine things that we say, because I let her talk. I let her talk about her mom.
Yeah.
And that's what people need more than anything. Don't think that people want your advice. They don't.
Don't.
They don't need it.
Yeah.
And the truth is, even if I had lost my mother,
Yeah.
if I'd have said, "I know exactly how you feel," I mean, you might as well spit in somebody's face than to
I
say that.
know.
You might as well slap them in the face,
I know.
because I didn't lose her mother. I lost my mother, which I haven't, by the way.
Yeah.
And so nobody knows exactly how you feel. I could talk for an hour about
Yeah.
what to say and what not to say, and I do that in my grief seminar.
And I watch people, like on social media, all the I'm sorries. Like your
Oh,
I'm sorry doesn't fix shit. Like
you
I'm
didn't do
sorry.
anything,
I don't
right?
understand why we're apologizing in this moment, okay? But yeah, it's everybody gets so awkward and then we just do the robotic response.
Yeah.
I had a great, not great experience. That's probably like the worst way to say that, but one of my, this we actually got really close. One of my friends, she was an acquaintance really. His son committed suicide and she called me and she's actually in Texas and I answer the phone and I never I how do you respond to that? How I don't understand how you feel, but I honor how you feel. Like,
Yeah.
she's like, I want to die. And I'm like, fuck yeah, you do. Like, you're going
Yeah.
through the worst experience a mom could ever experience in this world. Well, the phone calls kept coming, and I was the only person in her life that didn't go with all the cliche bullshit of like whatever. And all the people that bombarded her with like, when are you going to get over this? You're not the only person that's lost a son. And all of, I'm like, people are really saying this, and I'm looking through this, and it would shut her more inside herself and give her less space to heal. She just kept closing in because people, I wish more people understood what you say and what you're expressing and the work that you're doing, because I've personally seen where it closes off on someone and God used me because I had no idea about
Yeah.
stuff. I'm not the grief, I'm not the grief counselor, but I just knew just be there for her, listen to her, and I did the things like, tell me about him. What was your favorite thing? What was the
That's all.
last, last thing you guys ate when, just those things. And I see her, she's doing so amazing now. And the grief is still there. She's never going to get
Yeah.
over that,
That's true. There's two things that I say about grief.
Yeah.
One, and you saw the quote before, but it's as unique as our fingerprints.
Yes.
There's no two people in this world that grieve exactly the same way. I mean, Kubler-Ross gave us the five stages of grief. Some say the seven stages of grief. And I mean, that's a nice blueprint or guide of maybe what to expect, but the overlap is, it's so unique. And, and you go in and out of the different phases and stages and things like that, but no one grieves exactly the same way. Don't ever tell somebody, "I know how you feel," because you don't. You absolutely don't. But the other that you mentioned, never ever say, "Aren't you over that?" Because you don't get over that. And it is. It's like losing an arm. And I had sent you a little video, had me using this very illustration. You probably heard me say it, but if I lost my right arm and I'm right-handed in an accident all at once, well, now I'm left-handed, whether I like it or not.
Exactly.
And it doesn't matter how much time goes by, I don't get the arm back. And at first, everything's going to be really awkward and left-handed. I mean, try brushing your teeth with your left hand. It's not going to go well. But even 5 years from now, or 10 years from now, 20 years from now, I'm not over that accident.
No.
I'm always going to say, "I wish I had that arm back."
Yeah.
And it's, I mean, and especially if someone loses a spouse, a son or daughter, and especially to suicide, it's not something that you get over.
No.
But what you said and what you did, the reason what you did was so effective. I tell you, my favorite chapter in the book that I wrote, Good Grief, Celebrate Your Life, is the ninth chapter. About to come out with a second edition of it in about 2 months.
Nice.
And the subtitle is actually going to be The 5 Questions That'll Change Your Life. But the ninth chapter is called Lessons from a Hobbit, a Grief Dog, and a Box of Matches.
Okay.
People hear that and they say, "What?"
Yeah.
And I really don't have time to. I won't tell you about The Hobbit. If you're familiar with the Lord of the Rings trilogy, there's an illustration that I use from that. All three of these are illustrations of how important it is to stay on the journey with the family,
Yeah.
but just to be present with that person. What you did, the reason it was so effective, there was a grief service dog that just passed away in February that worked for a funeral home near Nashville, Tennessee. His name is Mac, and he's actually going to be in the dedication of the second edition of this book. And Mac has served over 5,000 families over the last 8 or 9 years. And here's the thing: when I talk about grief dogs at my grief seminars, this is one of my favorite parts. I'll say, I mean, because a funeral home invests thousands of dollars for their training and just for the dog themselves. And if you are a grieving family at a visitation at this funeral home and Mac was working the visitation, he will amble over to the one who's grieving because they can sense it. They're amazing creatures. They really are. They're so intuitive. And will sit at their feet, put his big fluffy head right in your lap, and look up. And you know what he says? And I set it up just like that when I do my seminars. And people get their pens ready, like, "Tell me, I want to know what this trained service dog says." The magic words. It's like nothing.
Nothing.
He's a dog. Dogs don't talk. I mean, it would freak you out if that dog said, "Well, at least he's not suffering anymore." It doesn't say anything. And the reason they're willing to pay thousands of dollars and why Mac served over 5,000 families. And they remember that. They'll always remember Mac
Absolutely.
because he was present and he just sat there and he looked like, "I know it hurts. I wish it didn't hurt. You can pet me. And I'm just going to sit here and hurt with you." That is one of the most effective things. But I'd be remiss not to tell you about the matchbox because I got one here in my desk drawer. In fact, this is Ronald. Ronald Dockery, he passed away in October of last year. And people called him Ronnie, Granddad, Bubblehead was one of his nicknames.
Bobblehead. Is that a
And
great
of course, he was dead. On the back of this, and you can't really see it from there, but there's a fisherman. There's a light beer bottle because he loved the light beer. There's a cow. And in the scope, a deer. He loved deer hunting. Now, what's on these matchboxes are superfluous. But I make about 80 or 90 of these, enough for everybody who comes to the funeral. And here's why. At the end of the service, I'll get up and I'll say, "On behalf of this family, I want to thank all of you for coming today. But I'm going to tell you something you may not realize. They don't know you're here. They They're in a fog right now. They can't
Yeah.
believe he's gone. There's a reason the funeral home gives you a book with everyone's signatures in it. If they ever go back and look at this book of your signatures, I can promise you they're going to go down and say, "Oh my God, they were here?
Right.
That I haven't seen them in 2 years. I can't believe they were at his funeral."
Yeah.
And I said, "You probably hugged their neck and talked to them for 5 minutes, but nothing's getting in right now."
Yeah.
Now, here's the sad part. In about 2 weeks, that Novocaine wears off, and the first real tsunami of grief is going to knock them off their feet.
Yep.
And they're going to look up, and all of you've gone back to work. Nobody's going to be in the chapel then. Nobody's bringing them casseroles then. Nobody's saying that infamous, "Let me know if I can do anything." That's another thing you don't say. Just do. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And so I said, "But if you take one of these matchboxes home with you, put it in your kitchen junk drawer because I know you got one. I've got it here in my desk drawer.
Yeah.
I've got a few, as a matter of fact.
Yeah.
I've got them scattered around my house because I have hundreds." And I said, "And throughout the year, you might have to light birthday candles or dinner candles or a fire in the fireplace. Or heck, you might just be going for that pair of scissors or that roll of tape or that letter opener." And you roll that drawer out and you see him looking up at you.
Yeah.
"You don't need these to remember Ron. Who's going to forget Ron?"
Right.
Reach out to his wife,
Yeah.
reach out to one of his daughters. And all I want you to say is, "Remember the matchboxes that weird bald guy gave us at Ron's funeral?
Yeah.
I don't remember his name. I just thought he'd never shut up.
Yeah.
But anyway, we use those today. And I just want you to know I really miss him.
Yeah.
Man, I can't pass a fishing pond without thinking about Ron. Or
Yeah.
every time I go hunting, I think about Ron or whatever." And that's do more of what we did with the five questions today and tell him, "My gosh, I'll tell you one of my favorite memories. I didn't think about it at his celebration of life, but man, I'll never forget the time that we were hunting and this happened,
Yeah.
or whatever." And so anyway, I'm talking too much. You go
Oh,
ahead,
that's
Lynn.
incredible. I'm fighting tears. So whatever you have to do, I'm glad I had the time to like keep it stay composed. I want to ask you this, my final question for you, because we are coming up on our time and I want you to be able to have time to tell people about, your books, where to find you, all the things. My last question, if people really understood how short life is, what do you think they would change immediately?
Wow, that's an epic question. Good for you. There is a poem that I read, and I'm not going to read it now because I can barely get through it when I read it. And it's called "If Tomorrow Never Comes." Yeah, and it starts out just by saying, "If I knew it was the last time I'd see you fall asleep,
Yeah.
I'd tuck you in more tightly and pray the Lord your soul to keep. And if I knew it was the last time I'd see you walk out the door, I'd call you back for another hug, just give you one more." And
Yeah.
it goes on like that. And of course, as you can see, I can't believe I quoted the first couple of lines. But the whole thing is, if tomorrow never comes, you don't want to have any regrets about today.
Yeah.
It talks about, if you knew that life is as brief as it is, you'd keep shorter accounts. You wouldn't hold grudges. You'd say, "I'm sorry, and forgive me,
Yeah.
and it's okay." And so it's, there is one of the only rubber stamp parts of my services is I talk about life is brief and death is certain, and we need a savior. I don't preach a sermon, but I remind them that, man, in fact, a little humor to it. If you've heard the expression, "Life's like a roll of toilet paper. The closer you get to the end, the faster it goes." And it's true. I mean, it's like, my gosh, I just turned 57, and it felt like I was trying to adjust to turning 50 like a few weeks ago. It's like, where did those other 7 years go?
Right.
Are you kidding me? And so you do start to view, I mean, if you did. It's like the old country song that talks about live like you're dying,
Yeah.
What would you do if you knew that this was the last day of your life on this earth? What would you say? What wouldn't you say? And so that's a great perspective question, Brandon, and I'm glad you asked it. But and it begs the question again, my bread and butter, at least what has been for the last dozen years or so, has been, plan out your funeral ahead of time for the personal, emotional, and financial benefits of that. You can freeze the cost and pay it out little by little, but your family's not stuck having to make these arrangements,
In their grief.
and they're in the middle of their grief when they can barely say their own name, let alone come up with all the information for a death certificate and all the things. And how are we going to pay for this? Funeral home has to get paid up front. I mean, they don't have a repo guy. It's not like you've missed three payments. We're going to dig them up now, put them in your garage.
We're digging him up. He's in the front. I mean,
I'm sorry. Yeah, you got behind on your payments, so we're undoing it.
oh boy.
And so, yeah, you don't want to leave your family in a situation like that. Take care of your pre-arrangements, but also be preemptive about the relationship stuff. I mean, holding grudges, not speaking to people, it's just worth it, and so but as far as grief support is concerned, you get bonus points, Brandon, if you know anybody who's passed away in the last year. Especially make note of all of the firsts, all of the, I mean, the first Mother's Day, Father's Day, birthdays, anniversaries, Thanksgiving, Christmas. My gosh, this is going to be the very first one without their grandfather, without their mom, without that person. And so, and just listen more. People don't want your advice. They just want you to say, hey, I really can't even wrap my mind around what you're going through, but I just want you to know I'm here. Yeah.
I love that, and I can attest to how much that works by just being someone on the other end of the phone listening to the crying and the screaming,
Oh, yeah.
holding space for that. And they need that. They need that.
Absolutely.
No
But
words.
tell.
Let them go crazy.
To answer your question, though, my brand new LLC is called Morning Into Dancing, and I have a website because I'm a very passionate public speaker, and I would and by the way, wherever you're listening to this, there is nowhere that I won't go to speak at a funeral. If you'd like for me to personally do the funeral of your loved one, reach out to me. I mean, I just did one in Arkansas in December, and I just did three up in the Dallas-Fort Worth area just a few weeks ago. I'll go anywhere. Speaking in Colorado next month and Las Vegas the end of this month. And so all of my speaking is called speakerjason.com. So I can't even believe that was available. But speakerjason.com has my phone number, my email, how to get in touch with me. There's a link to get my book there, but I'm very excited about the book coming out as a second edition because it will have the subtitle Five Questions That'll Change Your Life. It's going to be released in Spanish, and yo hablo un muy poquito español, so I'm not doing it. They're doing that for me, and they're going to use my voice and make an audible version, which there is already an audio version of the first edition, but it was me, and it took me 8 hours to record a 5-hour book. So I think AI is going to do much better than that. So, but speakerjason.com, if you want me to speak at a loved one's funeral, or if you just very soon, I'm going to be rolling out a course teaching people, certifying people to be a celebrant like I am,
Love that.
and you can start changing lives as well. It's very rewarding.
That's incredible. Okay, Jason, it's my turn to tell you what I think actually makes you special, because it's not just what you do, it's how you show up in the moments that most people don't know how to handle. And you step into grief, into loss, into literally the hardest day of people's lives, and you bring something unexpected, but everything that you were called to bring, and that is the light. You bring it, you are it in your energy, in your voice, and you're reminding people that even in the middle of loss, that there's still connection and there is still meaning, and that there are moments of joy. And a lot of people avoid these spaces. You're walking straight into it, and you're making them human again. I think that's what makes you special. And you guys, make sure you check the show notes to get linked up with him. To everyone listening, life is shorter than you think, so stop waiting, stop holding back. God did not create you to live halfway. You're meant to live fully, to show up fully, to become who you're called to be the light, to be contagious, to be courageous, to be magnetic. And please do not forget that your mess is the message, even the pain, even the loss. That is where real meaning is built. And you guys, podcasting is one of the most powerful tools right now, and like nobody's using it. Okay. Your voice matters more than you think. And that's why I created the podcast support group. Okay. I want to help you simplify this, start it, turn your story into something that actually helps people. Action matters. So if you've been sitting on your story, make sure you join that group, get in the arena, start using your voice. And then I need you to hit subscribe to the show. Need you to share it, okay? I know that you know a lot of people that Jason needs to know, and he can't find those people unless you do your job here and you click share to the people that it matters, okay? Send it to the people who need it. Make sure you leave a review. The stars are cute, but like if you write it out, it takes a couple minutes. Helps us find more people. And if you're ready for the hot seat, I want you guys to come tell me why you're special. Jason, just God bless you, and thank you for everything that you're doing, and thank you for your time on the show today.
It's been a pleasure, Brandon. You're special too. I appreciate what you're doing.
Thank you.
Thanks for being a voice.